Welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The conflict in Ukraine and the war in Iran is reshaping the global order. The West, led by the U.S., refuses to accept the reality of a multipolar world. This is exactly what these conflicts are about, the reshuffling of the geopolitical chessboard. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Aleksandar Pavic in Belgrade. He is a member of the Serbian parliament. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babic. He is the deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with our guest in Belgrade. You know, Aleksandar, for the entire length of the conflict in Ukraine, I've said this is much, it's part of a much broader geopolitical shift that the world is going through. And then we had the war or wars against Iran, which I think adds or confirms my thesis. And then lo and behold, over the last news cycle, the person that claims to be president of Ukraine attacked an Iranian ship in the Caspian Sea. So actually, now we have a tangible, very visible connection. Obviously, Zelensky is trying to curry favor with Donald Trump. We'll see if it works. But they are connected. This is we're living through a time of amazing geopolitical shifts, and these conflicts are, as time goes on, become more and more related. Your thoughts?
Well, definitely no one in the United States, including the MAGA crowd, who are not globalists in a classical sense, they don't want the American century and a half to end, definitely. They don't want a globalized world with America at the forefront. They want America to be the United States to be the strongest possible, you know, the number one in the world, and everyone else should still listen. Well, it's not happening, as we can see. But I would say one thing about these two conflicts, Iran and Ukraine. And this is something that I thought, and then Tucker Carlson reinforced me in my thinking. And I think he's right in saying, this was a few months ago, that actually the conflict in Iran was not something that was actually in accordance with what Trump wanted to do. That actually the conflict in Iran was, in a way, designed to sabotage what was happening between Moscow and Washington, the kind of reshuffling that Trump was actually interested in, and that is gradually distancing himself from NATO, from the EU, etc. And I really think that at least a part of Trump's circle really wanted to see if they could find some sort of a strategic relationship with Russia, on the especially economically, and on the energy plane. And I think that the war in Iran, which was practically Trump was pushed into it, forced into it, he didn't want this kind of war, in a way sabotaged not only that general plan, but it's sabotaging his presidency. And I don't think that's something that Trump had in mind. I don't think he had in mind $5 plus prices at the gas pump with the midterm elections coming up. I don't think he had plans for inflation rising. I don't think he had plans for munitions being depleted. And
essentially, he wasn't planning for a forever war. He was duped into believing it would be a very quick one. No. But Dima, what makes this all the more interesting, if not bizarre, is that Aleksandar is telling us about high oil prices and what Americans pay at the pump. But the NATO proxy war on Russia is adding to that cost. Okay, it is limiting Russian energy resources on the market, not by much, and maybe to where it goes on the global market. Russia is exporting all of the time, but this is something that, you know, it wasn't planned, But what we see now is that Russia, China, and Iran, it used to be just Russia and China. Now Iran is part of that gambit, struggling for a sovereignty and to break away from the rules-based order that the Western liberals are so fond of.
I think that the conflicts, both in Ukraine and in Iran, they were avoidable. I mean, this is something that people love to hear, that someone calculated everything. You have an economic interest behind every major disaster. And history teaches us that this is not the case, unfortunately. Europe and the West in general are sometimes possessed by destructive ideologies, which push them into doing things that cannot be explained. I mean, what was Russia's calculus? We're supplying cheap gas and oil to Europe. They're not going to wage a war on us because this is against their interests. Nevertheless, the ideology which is now possessing Europe, to a lesser extent the United States, it pushed them into that. And we're now seeing Europe basically, you know, how do you call that? You know, Europe is launching satellites that are targeting Ukrainian or sometimes, obviously, European-made drones into hitting Russia's infrastructure. Not just oil refineries or military objects. We now see, marketplaces storages attacked. You know, thousands of people lose their property. What's the point of it? And the point is, I'm sorry, destructive ideology. If we look at it from the point of view of a young man who wants his life to be fulfilled, okay, I hear it all the time. You know, young people in Russia see their future destroyed. Young people in the United Arab Emirates who came there from all over the world, they now want to get out. They see their hopes crushed. Who crushed their hopes? Was it Iran who started the war? No. I'm sorry, but it was the American and Israeli elite which miscalculated, which talked themselves and they talked their electorate into believing that you can only deal with Iran by the means of destruction. So that's what you get when you follow a destructive ideology.
You know, Alexander, the law of unintended consequences is constantly in play here because the Ukraine proxy war was designed that Russia is so weak. Sanctions will destroy it, destroy their currency, and people will overthrow the government. Haven't we heard that scenario recently? Oh, in Iran, all you have to do is decapitate the elite, and there will be a revolution, and there will be a pro-Western government, a pro-Israeli government in Tehran. I mean, these people work in the realm of fantasy. And, you know, I have to really seriously question the billions and billions, the tens of billions of dollars that go into so-called intelligence seems to be worthless. I mean, you could ask anyone, say, well, if you attack a country, what do you think? They're going to overthrow their government? No, they'll probably rally around the flag. I mean, you don't have to have gone to an Ivy League school to figure that out. Alexander.
Yeah, the liberal West is totally immersed in wishful thinking, in fantasy thinking, projection. They never had a plan B. What you said about the conflict in Ukraine, you know, now we have, what, the 21st round of EU sanctions against Russia? Well, I remember when the first round of sanctions was imposed. This was right after the special military operation started. What was the main battle cry? We're going to bring, these are sanctions from hell. They're going to bring Russia down to its knees.
turn the ruble into rubble.
Absolutely. And you know what? It shows they don't have a plan B, but it's the same people who are still in power. And those are the people who were supposed to bring Russia to its knees. That was the grand plan. It was the grand plan of the globalists. And Beijing was supposed to be next. That's what they were thinking about. And they just didn't, they couldn't believe that they couldn't succeed in that. You know, it's the same kind of a thing with, you know, it's like Hitler in the bunker in April of 1945 all over again. And they think, well, the next round of sanctions will do it. And, you know, they're moving around these imaginary divisions, hoping for a different outcome. It's because...
Or you could replace that. I like the analogy. Oh, these new drones, it's going to change the course of the war. These wonder weapons, the drones. Again, this goes into the realm of fantasy. These are fantasy illusions. Because yeah. I think, as all three of us will agree, is that, well, if Ukraine is winning, it's winning online, but it's not winning on the battlefield.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, online it's winning, but it's not winning even as much as it used to be even online. You know, that's the thing. These people are puppets, let's face it. And they were installed for specific purposes. That most of them came out of, World Economic Forum, junior leadership programs, et cetera.
Soros people.
Yeah, and they are programmed. Their intellectual capacity is not very high, to put it mildly. They're there to do a job. The thing is, they're taskmasters. They didn't have anything else in mind. They can't rule the world the way they want it. They can't retain their positions if it's a multipolar world. Yep. It can only function if it's a unipolar world, or if it's a quasi-globalist world, one world where they control everything, and it's not happening, but they have no way out, and now they're stuck. But it's a dangerous situation, on the other hand, because they're going to take it, they'd rather take everyone down with them than agree to some kind of a true compromise, you know, and we know who's going to trust anything that they sign anymore anyway. So this is the danger of the current situation.
You know, Dima, it's really interesting is that I think all of us would agree that the multipolar world does exist. And for the global South, that's been widely recognized. That's why there's this new impetus to maintain or attain economic sovereignty, for the very reasons that Alexander said. You can't trust the West. But the Western elite still can't conceive of a multipolar world, and that is the tension. They don't live in the world that actually exists. They still live in their fantasized neoliberal order. That's the conflict, Dima.
Well, it's absolutely right. And the problem is made even more complicated by the fact that actually the Russian elite, the Chinese elite, I'm sorry, even the Serbian elite, they didn't want a conflict with the West. Initially, the plan was to join the West, you know, to somehow adapt our countries after the communist period to the bigger free world and trade with the West and have intellectual exchanges. And what do we see now? You know, just recently,
they wanted all of those things, but they want their sovereignty too. They want both, right?
Well, I think a lot of them thought that the West was wise enough not to limit their sovereignty too much, and the West was certainly wise enough to keep economic ties and to develop scientific exchanges. Just look at the news. I mean, this is not widely reported, but Pentagon imposed sanctions on 130 universities and high schools.
All right, Dima, I have to go to a hard break, but after that,
Including Moscow State University.
We'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. And Dima, you were talking about sanctioning of universities. Continue.
So the United States imposed sanctions on universities, 130 universities in China, Iran, and Russia. They also sanctioned airports. I don't know what airports have to do with wars or with danger to democracy. I always thought airports were an epitome of the global world, global exchange. No, they sanctioned Domodedovo, Sheremetyevo, and other airports operating in Moscow. So obviously, you know, the reason why Russian elite started to push for a multipolar world, I'm sorry, it was the necessity. I know the people who were irritated. I know the people in Russia, in the Russian elite, who were irritated by this very notion, multipolar world in the 90s, in the early 2000s. They said it was the language of hostility. We should drop it. I know the same kind of people in Serbia and even in China. But nevertheless, you know, we were forced into this new world. We were forced to resist. And I quite agree with Alexander. The problem with totalitarian ideology is that there is never plan B, because the ideology is supposed to be perfect. Why do you need plan B when you have scientific theory?
Well, no, it's even worse, because they think they're morally superior. That is even a bigger
morally
problem.
And even scientifically. I mean, what's the plan for Russia? You know, let's consider this very idea of regime change in Russia, in Iran, and other places. I mean, Putin has been immensely patient with the West. You remember Obama kicked out Russian diplomats from Washington. What was Putin's reaction? He invited the children of American embassy officials to a New Year or Christmas celebration in the Kremlin. So Putin's patience was immense, but they ran out of it.
Yeah, but Dima, this patience issue is very, very important. Alexander, you know, when we look how the Western lens on Russia and Iran, it's a very specific view and perception that they create for their publics. These are crazy elites. They're full of hate, vengeful. They're unreasonable. You can't trust them. And it's actually the inverse here. If you look how, and you know, Dima brought up only one of so many examples of Russian patience, which I actually find very frustrating sometimes, and Dima and I privately talk about it. But there's been a consistency of patience, of always having the door slightly ajar for negotiations. And remarkably, and as a person that was brought up in America, Iran was always the definition of irrationality. Look how the ruling authorities in Tehran have been ruling during this entire two wars, the 12-day war and the current one here. Rational, calm, consistent. If we look at the now defunct MOU, who wrote it? The Iranians wrote it, okay? Donald Trump signed it. He had no intention of honoring it. But we get this exact opposite. The reality is exact opposite of the propaganda and the narratives that have been constructed in the West against Russia and against Iran.
Yes. When the Berlin Wall fell, everyone thought, well, the breath of freedom is going to go eastward. Well, no, it was the other way around. It was the breath of totalitarianism, or what was left of it, that went west. And that, you know, and you, that's the propaganda you're talking about. It's amazing how propagandized the Western media has become. And it started during the war in Yugoslavia in the 90s. You know, CNN did it more than anyone else, actually. They falsified their reporting from the ground, because then the Hitler had to be Slobodan Milosevic, you know. And then the new Hitler was Saddam afterwards. And you knew Hitler was Gaddafi, Assad, and finally Putin. You know, that's the way they work. It didn't used to be that way. And that was one of the reasons that the West did win the Cold War. You know, let's be straight. You know, we got to admit that. You know, it was at least the appearance of freedom that made it so attractive to others. And what Dima was saying, the elites, in Serbia as well, and in Russia for sure, yes, everyone wanted to be like the West. In a way, you know, liberal democracy did seem like the winning system, but it was, we've seen through it, in the past few decades, it's not what it appeared to be, but they messed it up themselves. They messed it up themselves. It didn't have to be that way. I remember the debates over the expansion of NATO during the 90s. And you had, you know, the most preeminent Cold Warriors who were against it. They said, why? Russia is more democratic than the Eastern Europe. You know, why? They don't want war with us. We're just gonna cause a reaction, which is exactly what happened. But what happened was there was a change of elites, so-called elites in the West. We can see that. You know, they had their own kind of a coup. I mean, Wesley Clark talked about it. He actually said there was a policy coup that happened in Washington after 9/11. But, you know, it happened even before that, but it definitely did happen. And what we have is neoliberal, neocon warmongers without a plan B. They are Russophobic. They are against anyone who challenges their authority, and they're impossible to talk with. I mean, I love the Russian word that came into currency about 10 years ago, non-agreement capable, не договора способен. That's a great way to describe it. And that's the thing. Who do you have to talk to now? I mean, even Trump, who was, the alternatives were worse. I mean, can we imagine if Kamala Harris won? Yeah, so I can see that there was probably, I mean, in Serbia, most people were rooting for Trump for obvious reasons. I think Russians mostly wanted Trump to come as well. But as we can see, the blob is consuming him as well. He has to play ball with the military-industrial complex. He had to play ball with Lindsey Graham because he has no one else to play ball with.
But the leaders can come and go, Dima. But the ideological foundations always remain or change very slowly unless there is a dramatic a break, like this war against Iran, which the consequences of which we'll be living with for a very long time. But there's the foundations of this outlook on the world is that, yeah, the agreement incapable. But why that? Because any challenging interlocutor is considered illegitimate. The new Hitler, okay? There's, you know, this is what makes it, we can talk about the Minsk agreements, broken. And the Western leaders openly say, oh yeah, we never gonna honor that, okay? The whole Istanbul process, you know? Oh, you know, the Ukrainians can initial it. Oh, but no, you fight and we'll help you. The same thing, that's why I think the Iranians have quite rightfully come to the conclusion that, you know, game on. We can't talk to you people. You know, the West has created this impasse, okay, because of its ideological approach that any adversary is by definition illegitimate. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, you're absolutely right when you use the term of a dead end, you know. It's a dead end. I mean, okay, let's suppose they had their way with a regime change. You know, they replaced Putin with someone else. They ran out of Putin's patience. In a few months, maybe years, they would run out of the patience of the next leader, you know, with Iran. Oh, they were unhappy with the mullahs.
Saddam Hussein was an ally, a creature of Washington. Okay?
Exactly.
Gaddafi played ball. Okay.
Exactly. They killed the mullahs, okay, they killed the Ayatollah. Who's now running Iran? The generals of the Revolutionary Guard Corps, right? So basically their ideology, their idea doesn't work. You see it. You see it everywhere. But they keep pushing it because, you know, it's not a conspiracy. It's just people. We saw it in totalitarian countries. You get, at a certain point, you get a very weak and capable elite because only the ideologically pure, which means the most stupid, the most cynical, the most incapable, only they get to the top. You know?
So you're describing Kaya Kallas, right?
Exactly. Among many other people, you know, I'm describing Barroso, I'm describing Catherine Ashton. You know, one of the problems of the multipolar world is that we accept their logic of moving on. I mean, when we talk about the war in Ukraine or about the war in Iran, we say, oh, Trump, it all started much earlier. And we must start holding people accountable who started it all. I mean, the people who supported Maidan, Barroso, Catherine Ashton, they're still alive. No one talks about them. If we used thousandths, or maybe 1% of the venom which the Western media uses against Putin or against Iran, against these people, that would be fair.
Alexander, if you display this level of ideological purity, that is your immunity from being held responsible. He had or she had the best of intention. That's enough to get you off, to wipe clean even those that were behind the genocide in Gaza. They had the best of intentions. That's where we are.
Yeah. Yeah, they wrapped themselves up, in these wonderful intentions, which are, actually, they're never able to be put into practice. But, they're the idealists all of a sudden. And, if an idealist bombs a school full of girls, well, I'm an idealist. Stuff happens. Those people were very bad. And I had the best of intentions. So, I'm not, I can't be judged.
Well, the people that use that logic is at least they didn't grow up to live in an authoritarian society. It's very, very perverted the way these people think.
It is. But what the danger of it is that, how do you accept that things are not going your way anymore? How do you accept it? And again, I come back to what awaits us. Can anyone actually imagine these people to concede that they've lost? Nope. I can't. I can't do it. So what happens? When the U.S. runs low, dangerously low on ammunition, on standoff weapons, on interceptors, what's next? Does Israel come in?
Well, we've run out of time, gentlemen, but I have the unfortunate answer is that they always revert to extreme violence because Absolutely. Their logic is completely intellectually and morally bankrupt. On a very sour note, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests here in Moscow and in Belgrade. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.